Sam.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never see no more. Hello.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Sorry about that. Hold on, Darren will be with you in a minute.
Okay.
You're on, Darren.
Hollywood lost your faith in all that's good. Close the curtain, unplug the clock, hung his clothes on the shower rod, but he never got undressed, and no, he never made a mess.
Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next hour, as we focus on the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our individual liberties, and national sovereignty. We've been covering on this broadcast the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, which is an involvement in the United Nations system, the exporting of American jobs to the Central American countries that are impoverished, and we have traitors on our federal level, ladies and gentlemen, and these people are not going to be controlled through any other way that I can see other than by the states. State sovereignty, I believe, is the key in order to rein in the out-of-control federal government. And few people actually recognize this reality today, and as such, this is why we're in the shape that we're in. Is because we have people that don't tell individuals, don't instruct individuals to do the right thing by the country. We have many neocons out there, which are nothing but a bunch of cons, and they're urging people to call Congress. And what is Congress? Well, they're a bunch of traitors for the most part. I mean, I don't think we have any friends in the Congress anymore, with the possible exception maybe of Senator James Inhofe, who seems to, as I was telling Roger Mundy earlier as we spoke on the phone. I think Senator James Inhofe is about the only hero, if we have any heroes in Congress. But the reality is, the only heroes that we have, folks, are people on a grassroots level who do their best to preserve what we have in this country. And that's not going to be accomplished by hype. That's not going to be accomplished by screaming and yelling. What it's going to be how it's going to be accomplished is by quietly sitting down, whether it be at your computer or in a study somewhere with books, and learning how we got into this situation to begin with, and understanding that states' rights is the key to reclaiming our national sovereignty as well as state sovereignty. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we have a special guest. His name is Roger Mundy. I've quoted him within the past week because covering the Central American Free Trade Agreement, we see that several people made calls into about the time that NAFTA was going on. Many people made calls to Congress in an attempt to get NAFTA stopped, and yet the little traitors that we have in Congress went ahead and voted it through anyway, which leads me to believe that these people are bought and paid for by someone, and they have agendas of their own, and certainly national sovereignty isn't on their radar. But, ladies and gentlemen, Roger Mundy is joining us. Roger, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Darren. It's good to be back here.
Now, Roger has been involved with state legislators in... You're in the state of Kansas, right, Roger?
That's right,
And you had something going there for quite a long time, dealing with, I believe it was called the Kansas Tenth Amendment Society?
That's correct, yes.
Now, you have a lot of experience dealing with state legislators. Are these people as controlled as the federal ones tend to be?
Well, no, they're not. The federal ones, who can say how much they're controlled? We do see their actions. What else are we supposed to conclude? But they are like any representative. They will represent somebody. And the entire question always is who they represent.
Mm-hmm.
So the state's representatives, mostly they are... it's like they want to do good for the people. They want to do good, but they don't know what that is. And basically they have a really, really shallow view of government where only one time are the people really powerful. That's when they cast their vote. And all the rest of the time they're just going to do what they think's best or what their party says they should do. And
so in many respects, what you're saying is that state legislators tend to be even just as deceived as the regular general populace.
Oh, absolutely, yes, they are.
Mm-hmm.
They know very little. They know nothing about most of them, except the lawyers or perhaps the uniform law commissioners, are unaware of the new sort of legal standing of the people. As they're as ignorant of that as the people are, and they're as ignorant of the state's powers as the people are. They think they're just largely are representative of the people's ignorance, and it's unfortunate, but they are reflective of how the people are. So they actually think the federal government is supreme. They do chafe at the bit sometimes when they get mandates from the federal government, but then they're easily dissuaded from their disagreement as long as they get federal funding for these mandates, so forth. So it's a sad state of affairs. They need to learn who they are. And they need to learn what their powers are.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, of course, and what I like to emphasize the most is they need to have the support of the people in taking courageous stands for the welfare of the people. Now, you know, say we have one good congressman. Throughout our history, our national history, I guess I'll call it national history, we've had some outstanding congressmen. We've had a Congressman McFadden who was fighting the money trust, the Federal Reserves. We had a Congressman Lindbergh, and we've had a handful throughout time. What we see is these guys taking stands against the New World Order, or against the money trust, or against the UN, or communism in the Oval Office, or any number of things. And generally, they're either assassinated, or they're pushed out of office, or they're a lone voice, and their comments get relegated to the record, but the media doesn't cover it. And
right.
It's sort of like Daniel in the lion's den.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they need, we cannot depend upon these heroes to save us. They need the people behind them. They need to have so many people behind them that they can't be ignored.
Right. How did you wake up to all of this? Were you awake all your life?
No, actually, you see, I started out as a child, and you know, I guess I always, like so many of us, sensed something was wrong, and fundamentally coming to a knowledge of Christ and God, this answered a great deal. The most important thing, seek ye the kingdom of heaven first, and the rest will be given to you. Seeking that, and still, some years go by, and I'm troubled because things still aren't right, and it's not in me, it's in the world, and trying to begin seeking the truth out about that, begin seeking out the truth in history, and coming to some realizations like that, and then the good Lord, of course, opening my eyes at critical times. And got me involved in a group that later became the Kansas Tenth Amendment Society, and that was a very enormously eye-opening experience for me.
So the group was already established at the time?
Well, no, actually, I was there. They came together to consider becoming part of the committee of the 50 states. It was a Joe Stump thing out of Utah, and he was pushing the ultimatum resolution, which basically said if the federal government hit a certain deficit, that the union would be dissolved and that it would revert to the governors and so forth. I went to that meeting, to one of their earliest meetings, and my sister was involved in that. Well, not involved, but she was going to, so she took me. And we considered his ultimatum resolution and decided that it wasn't the answer, because we could see our governors are no more trustworthy than any other tyrant.
Good point.
Well, you know, the ultimatum resolution would have dissolved the Union of the States and thrown it back under temporary control of the governors, and it didn't seem like the right thing to do. And the last thing we wanted to do was dissolve the Union. What we wanted to do was to restore the Union. And then someone brought forward Charles Duke's Tenth Amendment resolution, which just stated... Basically stated a proper constitutional role between the federal and state government, and that all rang true to the people there, and so it was moved to name the group the 10th Amendment Society, and try to get that passed through the Kansas legislature. And someone raised the question, well, what about the teeth? How do we enforce that? But no one knew. I mean, we were all very new. We were just common concerned citizens. we didn't know how to enforce it. We didn't know what to do. So that was tabled for the time being. And when they chose me as chairman after a few years involved in this, I went into prayer asking the Lord to show me, please, what was the teeth in the Tenth Amendment? How could we enforce this Constitution? How could we restore this union and decentralize this power out of the hands of the enemy? And he showed me, it's almost like a verse, you know. I mean, he showed me a single line in the U.S. Constitution, Article 6, final line, Article 5, that no state shall be denied its equal suffrage in the Senate without its consent. I'd read that so many times, but he showed me the meaning of it. And what the meaning was the states had an undeniable constitutional power to control every vote and every word of their union representatives called U.S. senators in the U.S. Congress. And I wept. It was an astounding revelation. I knew it to be true and began to research, and then all the research I did affirmed that was indeed the case, and that it happened to be the only clause in the entire Constitution that could never be amended. It cannot be amended. It is at the end of the section in the U.S. Constitution that talks about amending the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few provisions in there. These amendments will be valid for all intents and purposes, provided that. And there were like three provisions, a couple dealing with slavery that lapsed, the time lapsed on that, leaving only one provisio, provided that no state shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate without its consent. That means no amendment can change that power. And so it is, in effect, it is the Constitution, it is the law. So I knew I had the constitutional grounds, and I took this to the state legislature. I saw a few things come forward, a few state legislators issuing commands to the congressman to appear before the state to give an accounting of his behavior in Congress. They were not obeyed, but this was a first and, yes, feeble attempt, but it did ring with some state legislators.
Mm-hmm.
And that was introduced into the state Senate. And so I knew it was a doable thing, more important perhaps than even, not more important in a practical way, but more important in a way of understanding what self-government is, was the concept that the people have a right, or the state has a right over, just as the state has a right over its representatives, called senators, the people have a right to control, to command, to instruct their representatives in any level of government. And then I seek out in the Kansas Constitution, Article 3, Section 3 in the Bill of Rights, that stated that people have the right to peaceably assemble, consult for the common good, and instruct their representatives, etc. And so the right is actually written in the state constitution. It's in other state constitutions, not in all of them. When I began searching through the history of this fundamental concept of self-government, it's everywhere. And this is the great power unspoken of, because whenever we hear people talk about trying to get control of their government, they talk about vote for this, vote for that. Well, you know, if you go and you vote for somebody, you're voting for who will take that seat. But if you and your neighbors, your friends and neighbors, assemble and consult for the common good, you have the power to control what they do. And after all, the only reason you vote for somebody to take a seat is because you believe you know what they're going to do. But actually all you have is their promises. It really wouldn't matter too awful much who you put in there if you could control what they do while they're in there. So
right.
It is a more fundamental, a greater power, and one avoided by all the establishment, a topic avoided. Even in Black's Law Dictionary, you will not find an entry for that. It'd be too glaring an admission. All that, you go back in the history and you check the philosophers, and David Hume was a great philosopher of the Scottish school that was a great inspiration to James Madison, and Hume talks about this power of instruction, because in England at the time they had a great debate between the Commonwealthmen and the opposing Royalist Party, and the Commonwealthmen were claiming this power of the people. And Hume was criticizing this power because if it came to be commonly practiced, then all the monarchs in Europe would fall and there would be nothing left but pure republics. What a horrible thought that is.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just listening.
Okay.
I want to give people the idea of what the 10th Amendment State Sovereignty Resolution, we have an example of that on the sweetliberty.org website in the state's rights section. It says, whereas the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States reads as follows, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people, and whereas the 10th Amendment defines the total scope of federal power as being that specifically granted by the United States Constitution and no more, and whereas the scope of power defined by the 10th Amendment means that the federal government was created by the states specifically to be an agent of the states, and whereas today, and the date on this was 1994, but you would put it in 2005, the states are demonstrably treated as agents of the federal government, and whereas numerous resolutions have been forwarded to the federal government by the General Assembly without any response or result from Congress or the federal government, and whereas many federal mandates are directly in violation of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, and whereas the United States Supreme Court has ruled in New York versus United States 112, and they give the reference there, 1992, that Congress may not simply commandeer the legislative and regulatory processes of the states, and whereas a number of proposals from previous administrations and some now pending from the present administration and from Congress may further violate the United States Constitution, now therefore be it resolved by the blank of the blank, a General Assembly of the state of whatever state you're in, and those concurring herein, that the state hereby claims sovereignty under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States over all powers not otherwise enumerated and granted to the federal government by the United States Constitution, and number two, that this serves as notice and demand to the federal government as our agent to cease and desist effective immediately mandates that are beyond the scope of its constitutionality delegated powers. It be it further resolved that copies of this resolution be sent to the President of the United States, the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, the President of the United States Senate, the Speaker of the House, and the President of the Senate of each state's legislature of the United States of America, and somebody's congressional delegation, there's a blank there. That's the 10th Amendment State Sovereignty Resolution. Do you know how many states have passed that?
I think it got only up to 20 some. We did get it through Kansas legislature. At the time it was going through the Kansas legislature was the time when they were launching the Conference of the States. And what this was a Council State Governments New World Order substitute for the 10th Amendment resolution. And it was couched in 10th Amendment terms, yet it would have led to a constitutional convention. I call it a standing constitutional convention, basically remaking government into a national parliament, and it would have specifically amended the 10th Amendment and Article 5, where we find the guaranteed power of the state to control their U.S. senators. Two amendments were targeted at that, one at the 10th Amendment and two at Article 5. Mm-hmm. So it said to me, it took me maybe another year to, and the insight of a true genius in our group, John Michael, to show to me that what I've been preaching about instruction and state power over the Senate was in fact targeted by the Conference of the States that we did defeat in Kansas. And it was astounding to me. I hadn't even seen it, but you know how slippery snakes can be. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, what they did, they targeted one amendment towards the 10th Amendment to amend it to take all issues of the 10th Amendment the states would take their stands on and then lay them prostrate before the federal government in the form of the Supreme Court, which is the death knell to the state power. Or and two other amendments that would basically legalistically fulfill the consenting by the states to a loss of their power in the Senate. But it was written in terms that looked like it would give power to the states, and that was roaring its way through various state legislators, picking up upon the momentum begun by the 10th Amendment resolution. Mm-hmm. And taking that momentum, attempting to plow its way through the other states. And that would have been once we got the 10th Amendment through, we focused all of our energies on defeating that monster, and managed to in Kansas. And other patriot groups, Jackie's very Jackie Petru, of course, was a and Chuck played a very major role in defeating that early demise of hopes of restoration of this union.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Oh my goodness gracious! So bloody and exhausted after that victory, taking up smaller battles, important ones. The group had spent its energy, had been fighting on too many fronts, without support, not enough members, not enough, you know, public awareness, even though we had victories and people went their ways. Basically, it kind of fell apart. I think the way I look at it was the Lord was leading us to learn about what we could do, the teeth of the 10th Amendment. What would the power be? How could we take this union back? And that's when the instruction, the Lord gave me this concept of this power that's been there the whole time and no one's ever talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And
hey, Roger.
Yeah.
We got to take a break here.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying this. So stay with us. We got another half hour to go here.
Okay.
Folks, great. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. My guest is Roger Mundy. He's formerly with the Kansas 10th Amendment Society. He's got some other projects that he's working on that he has in the works. And we're talking about state sovereignty tonight. the means by which we can control and rein in the federal government and preserve our individual liberty and the sovereignty of our country. Stay with us. More on the other side of the break.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and following the instructions there to support us. Thank you for listening.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. In this day of economic uncertainty and soaring unemployment, safe investments are often hard to find. But investing in the precious metals is the safest investment of all because gold and silver is real money. Government-printed currency is not. Call Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company at 1-800-375-4188. Melody has been helping people secure their financial future for over 10 years. While others in the business claim honesty, Melody will deliver. Give her a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Be sure to listen to The Church at Kaweah every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Kaweah is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact The Church at Kaweah by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
Broadcast American Exposé. Darren Weeks here with you. My guest is Roger Mundy, and we're talking about state sovereignty and how to preserve our individual freedom by using states' rights to control the federal legislature. And Roger, first of all, I want to ask you about your contact information. Is there any way that people? I guess you don't have a website anymore, do you?
No, but they can send me emails if they want.
Okay, you want to give that out?
Yeah, I'd be fine. It's Mundy, M-U-N-D-Y, at, or that little symbol, power, P-O-W-W-W-E-R, dot net.
Okay.
That'd be fine.
So it's Mundy, M-U-N-D-Y, at power, dot net, and power is spelled P-O-W-W-W?
That's right.
E-R?
That's right.
Dot net. Okay, very good.
Okay.
Now, before we went to the break, we were talking about the 10th Amendment resolution. You know, it seems to me like as we look at the world situation, this country is really suffering the death of a thousand slices. I mean, we've got the United Nations, our involvement in the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned several times on this broadcast that the State Department website talks about the United Nations being an extension of U.S. foreign policy. I know of a particular speech where the guy basically, he says that almost verbatim. And yet, under Agenda 21, which is the United Nations Blueprint for Sustainable Development, an environmental agenda, but it basically boils down to population control on every front. We have the redistribution of wealth. We have the taking money out of the American economy. The jobs are being exported overseas. We have all these wars that are embroiled around the world. Basically, the whole world situation, in a nutshell, is being perpetrated and instigated by the United Nations, which is apparently an arm of the U.S., you know, by extension.
Yes.
And yet, so we have an out of control federal government here, and you look at this and you think, man, you know, the job is just overwhelming, and yet there's a remnant, and it seems like there's always been a remnant throughout history, the entire history of this country, of people who have been awake and who have understood the problem and done research and as to how this thing could be undone and preserved. Mm-hmm. And I think this whole thing would be a lot further along had it not been for that remnant. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes, indeed, of course, yes.
So that pretty much outlines the big responsibility for us, doesn't it?
It's a towering civil responsibility. It's a huge burden. You know, it's a moral obligation that we have to ourselves and our fellow men to stop evil from destroying our families, our friends, our country, humanity. And the remedy is so much more powerful than the enemy that it's doable, and it is doable by all peoples on the planet. So all it takes is the belief in the people that they have a right to control their own government, a right to control those who represent them, and in fact it can work under any form of government. Ours happens to be formulated along principles that reflect just that. So it should start here, and I think Americans owe it to the world to start here, especially because we've become the global bully for this global socialism and centralized power that's going on now. And so I think we have more of a moral obligation than anybody else in perhaps in history.
In your opinion, the treaties that have already been signed with other countries, our involvement in the World Trade Organization, and they're trying to get us involved in the Kyoto Protocol now, all of these treaties that our federal government signs, I've heard people say that these treaties supersede the Constitution. What do you say about that?
Well, constitutionally, a treaty would supersede a state constitution. I think it's unfortunate wording in the original Constitution, but no, it cannot supersede the U.S. Constitution on many fronts. One is by a simple principle in that the Constitution is that instrument that gave power to the federal government to begin with, and there is nothing within the Constitution that can supersede itself. The Congress, by a legislative act of treaty or anything else, has any power to amend or suspend or supersede the Constitution. As a matter of fact, a simple act of legislation against a treaty has more power than the treaty. This is even admitted to by constitutional scholars and by, of all people, Arlen Specter, that if Congress passed a law that violated a treaty, that the law would have more power than the treaty. And so the answer to treaties is really lends itself well with the state legislative power over U.S. senators, because it is the Senate that ratifies treaties. You see, the House doesn't really have anything to do with the treaties. But, and that's why a legislative act of Congress, it has more power than the treaty, because it is, they call it a plenipotentiary power. It is both houses acting to give its consent to something, and that's a law. Yet a treaty is just merely the Senate and the President. So it has, it's a lower standing in law than a mere legislative act. And the state legislature, what I was saying, it lends itself well to the power of the state legislature over their U.S. senators, in that the state legislature has it within their constitutional power, which cannot be amended under Article 5, to instruct those senators to vote no or to move to rescind any treaty. And all upon pains of recall. The state has the power to recall U.S. senators. And in the history of the United States, during the first 100 years, the states routinely instructed their U.S. senators on what they should do in the Senate. And oftentimes, like Carolina, I forget, South Carolina, one of them, even required their U.S. senators to come back at the end of the session and give an accounting to the state legislature about what they'd done there. And others gave more broad instructions. And some were, they might as well not give them instruction, but basically it's instruction, do what you think's best, perhaps, you know. But this power can't be amended. And it waits in abeyance. It is a vested interest, as they call it in law. It can't be changed by time or precedent, and it is an unamendable portion of the U.S. Constitution. So it simply waits for the state legislatures to understand they have that power and then to use it. In the past, when state legislatures instructed their U.S. senators, and the senators didn't want to obey it, they resigned, because they would rather, it's more honorable to, more less embarrassing to resign than to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so that happened several times, and the drafters of the U.S. Constitution knew this, and you may notice in their provisions for vacancies occurring in the Senate, it is by resignation or vacancies by resignation or otherwise. They anticipated U.S. senators resigning because of that power of the state over the U.S. Senate. But in the House, they don't mention by resignation, because they did not anticipate the people having the power to organize to such an extent they could. In a large enough body, command their U.S. representatives to resign their office. So they didn't even include that in the U.S. Constitution. But it is there for the Senate, and it is there because they knew it would happen, and in fact it did.
Hmm.
So history is there.
Right.
What we're lacking is the kind of popular assemblies that, for example, won our independence from Great Britain. When the British did the Stamp Act, and when the British King George was doing his dirty tricks, at that time the colonial state governments were asking the people to give them instructions to declare independence from England. They asked them to, and in some states, the popular assemblies issued those instructions themselves. When the crown shut down the state assemblies, the people assembled themselves and formed their own governments again. And so, when they issued the unanimous Declaration of Independence, it was delayed on a motion by Thomas Jefferson to send the delegates back to the states who had not voted for independence to try to get their instructions changed to vote for independence, and they delayed that unanimous declaration until it could be unanimous, and those delegates did return with new instructions to declare independence.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great and fundamental power of any union, especially a union of states, which probably should be called nation states, and cannot be amended.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you followed the Terry Schiavo situation at all.
Oh, yes.
It was a devastating, tragic situation.
Yes.
And there was a lot of judicial tyranny that took place there as the legislature in the state of Florida would pass laws. They passed Terry's law, and this activist judge named George Greer would strike down the law. It seems like more and more these days we have legislators passing laws, and then the courts turn around and strike down those laws. These activist judges are on the bench doing traitorous things. But how do you deal with that, I guess, is the question I'm trying
to ask. Well, the best way to deal with that is for the people to get into their assemblies, consult for the common good, and issue instructions to their state representatives that they will obey or face recall, that they will forthwith impeach that judge and that governor, that will not arrest a murderer on the bench. The people in assembly must hold their state representatives' feet to the fire. And it does two things. It also gives the state representatives the grounds to take this action, because it's a fearful thing to do, and you're going against the powers that be and the great money interests. By simply giving them, when you give them those instructions, then the state legislature says, I have to obey it or I get recalled. I get fired. So I have no choice, and that's supporting your state legislature in a way that has no comparison to any other way. You tell them what to do on pains of recall, and in that case it would be, you will impeach this judge, and you will impeach this governor unless they obey this legislative command to execute the laws. And so...
What it boils down to is people need to start getting angry again,
doesn't it? Well, that's right. And basically they need to get angry, but they need to come together. See, the thing is, what I'm thinking about here, we can peacefully come together and consult for the common good and discover our powers and begin to exercise these powers, give them to our state legislatures, go up to those state legislatures, and we are not here for anything except to empower you. And these are our instructions. And you, with anyone, any special interest comes in your office, any party head comes to lean on you, you tell them you have no choice. Your constituents have commanded you to do this with these formal instructions, or you will be recalled. And if you don't like it, you go talk to them. That's what I told the state legislature up there. I talked them about instruction the best I could. And I said, the people want this and they want that. And if any party boss comes on you or any special interest, you tell them to call me. You tell them to come down to the 10th Amendment Society and they will get a lesson like they've never learned. I said, we're like cockroaches. You step on one of us and 10 more show up. So the people motivated is the greatest fear of the few that rule from the top. That's why they spend untold billions to control the media, because they know they have to control the thoughts of the people or they don't have a chance.
Yep, mind control.
It's mind control.
That's right. We've got Stephen Jacobson scheduled for next Monday night. to talk about mind control and media manipulation. But, you know, in this day and age, we have the government swallowing up more and more land. They're working with public-private partnerships. You got these land trust organizations, which are non-governmental organizations.
Right.
They're purchasing land, swallowing up acres and acres and acres. I live in Michigan, and I enjoy camping out in northern Michigan. But more and more, there's just land that's just being swallowed up left and right in the UP and the lower peninsula, the northern lower peninsula. And so you have these public-private partnerships working together, and land is the land that's left is being hotly contested.
Mm-hmm.
Property values are raising artificially. And Amendment 5 to the Constitution says that accused people shall not lose their lives, liberty, or property except by due process of law.
Right.
If the government takes private property for public use, it must pay a fair price for it. No property shall be taken for public use without just compensation is the actual words that they use.
Right.
Shouldn't it say that no property should be taken at all without the consent of the seller?
Well, yes, it should. I mean, this is one of those fundamental rights that's not stipulated because it's so obvious. Now, there is this notion about eminent domain. However, you see, what's eminent domain? What it is like for an overriding greater good, a compelling reason, a highway or something. You know, I don't know. But what that boils down to is what the legislature says it is and what the courts will back up.
Well, anymore, we're seeing property taken just because some developer can create a larger tax base, you know, pay more taxes on it than a private citizen can.
Right. Well, the thing is, you see, the reform has to come from the people in assembly. When they get a hold of their legislature, we can demonstrate the legislative power is supreme. As it's been done before, where the number one people to ever get impeached are judges. And the number one charge was high-handedness. So judges get out of control. With the people in control of the legislature will impeach them. And if a judge rules something that claims it's constitutional, people go to the legislature and say, you will repudiate this and you will impeach him. You see what I'm saying? All of these things, this takings of the land without just compensation, without justifiable cause, can be reversed. If the people in control, these corporations, come in, the people can, through their legislature, is repeal their articles of incorporation. Which means that they're a body of the state. They exist at the whim of the state, the good pleasure of the people of the state. Under articles and corporate means they're incorporated part of the state. If people in control of their legislature, if you have an evil corporation, can say those articles will be hereby repealed or you're recalled.
So that's the way to attack the land trust organizations.
Yeah, you take their legal standing away from them. And then you instruct that legislature, you will hereby instruct the Attorney General to investigate and prosecute this group for criminal sedition or various other charges. And, there's plenty of legal beagles out here to come up with the proper terminology. But it all hinges upon the people controlling their legislature. So when they control their legislature, they control government.
It really is the simplest form of freedom, isn't it? Just the power of instruction.
It is. It is the fundamental power. After all, the Constitution itself is merely an instruction of the people. The day-to-day instructions, such as that crime called when the judges claim to be the final arbiter on what the Constitution says. I was on the radio with the state legislature here in Kansas, and he's being a lawyer, of course. He goes, what the Supreme Court, either the state or federal, says is constitutional. I said, excuse me, what the people say is constitutional is what the Constitution says. If the people in a body declare the Constitution says your underwear had to be red. That's what the Constitution says. Because the people are the power, and the judge merely an opinion. I said, after all, a judge speaks for the court, but no one man can be a court. It's a violation of the definition of the word court. The people are the general court. We created the judges. And through our power of instruction over legislators, we can recall them. And we can even compel the attorney general to file charges if they commit crimes such as judicial murder of severely handicapped women in a home for the terminally ill that shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Right. Very good.
Yeah.
Boy, I the hour has just really flown by. I always enjoy listening to you, Roger, because as I told you earlier, you know, sometimes dealing with all these issues, you tend to struggle a little bit at times with some depression.
Sure.
You got to be optimistic. You got to maintain the faith and hope, you know, and trust that our Heavenly Father, our God, will lead us through, that He is on our side, that, you know, we can make a difference. We can at least slow this thing down, and I'm convinced that if enough people woke up, we could turn this thing around. It's amazing the things that have been done with just a few people. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no. I think not only will we will slow it down and bring it to a stop, the New World Order is doomed. They are making enemies of humanity, and this is a big mistake. That they are trying to replace nationalism with earth worship. So they have ignored the time and true tested measures of esprit de corps and morale amongst their own enforcement troops. So you have no longer have a nation, and you no longer have a god, and you're supposed to worship the earth, and there's nothing no foot soldier hates more than dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, it won't work. And they've lost. They've made an enemy of humanity. Humanity will wake up. And is waking up. And what will happen, one way or the other, you see, the people will come together because out of dire necessity they will assemble, if for no other reason. It is best to assemble with some knowledge, prayerfully assemble, and ask for God to give you wisdom on what to do. And He will instruct you about instruction. And you see, it is so powerful, it doesn't seem like it would work, but the powers that be know it will, or they wouldn't spend more money on keeping propaganda and keeping the news media, keeping us stupid, and through their public education system as they do. They wouldn't do it, but they know the awesome power that this sleeping giant, that they're trying to put chains upon all of humanity. The sleeping giant awakes, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wonderful.
This is the key, and it will be done.
This time,
on a global level.
We have to go. We're out of time, but you're an inspiration, my friend. I want you to know that.
Well, thank you.
And
we
want to have you back as much as possible to talk to the people. And after you get your projects going, come back and let us know how they're going along, okay?
I definitely will do that, Darren.
Roger Mundy. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with us, Roger.
Oh, you're welcome. Please, yes.
His contact information is Mundy@POWWER.net. Mundy@power.net. God bless you, folks. I'll be back Friday. Chris will be back.